Now, Podcast One brings you Spike's Car Radio, a downloadable Cars and Coffee, hosted by writer, comedian, and automotive enthusiast, Spike Ferriston. Now, here's Spike.
So, this morning, a guy from Sweden, Zuckerman. I don't usually, unless I ask for questions, I don't usually answer questions. I'm sure you get a lot of questions on Instagram. We try. But this morning, a guy from Sweden said, I have a question. Would you answer my question? I said, sure, why not? He's in Sweden. I felt bad for him. I thought we'd start the show off, Spike's Car Radio, answering a question for the guy in Sweden. You want to know his name, Zuckerman? His name is Benjamin Datmo.
Doesn't sound Swedish to me.
He says, and I'm sure it's not even the greatest question, he just needs some help. Porsche 964, saving up to what would be my first Porsche and the one I would hope to own for many years to come. I live in Sweden, where it gets snowy and icy 4 or 5 months per year. Well, yeah, right? We know that about Sweden. But I would probably mainly use it on the weekends the rest of the year. My question, Spike and Zuckerman, C2 versus C4. I've heard a perfectly balanced C4 can be pretty darn great. But is the C2 the only pure option for what I should aim for? Thank you, Spike. Thank you. P.S. I love your podcast. It makes the moments between a couple of screaming children at home and perhaps not as loud but no less challenging clients at work some of the happiest. Keep it up and let Z know he's a dick. Oh, no. He says he's a badass. Look at that. You have a fan in Sweden.
I will send him Swedish fish. He can have a year's supply of Swedish fish on
me. So it's a good question, though, because it's a snowy – they have weather, obviously, and that's what the C4 is all about. And he sounds like he's on the verge of knowing he's a purist in C2.
Shall I answer?
You can give your opinion. I'll give mine. Go ahead.
I will give an answer. So the C4, first of all, you don't want to drive a 964 in the snow. I don't think that's the right application for that car, whether it's a C2 or a C4. I wouldn't want to rot the car in snow. But also understand that's the first version of the four-wheel drive Porsche, and it is not really perfected, and it is diabolically expensive to fix should it go bad. And I think it does detract from what you want to have in the car driving wise. So for all those reasons, forget the C4, get the C2.
All right. I think that's a solid opinion.
It's an answer.
It's an answer. Yes.
It's a comprehensive answer that should put
to... Have you had one of these C4s?
Yes, I have, in fact.
And tell me what goes wrong with it.
Well, okay.
I've not heard this before.
Yes, they break, and I can't tell you...
The all-wheel drive system.
Yes, and the front differential, all of that gearing is extremely expensive. They did not make a lot of them, and they're very expensive to fix.
And it didn't work right. So you're saying it's like the comparison would be the Tiptronic transmission versus the PDK.
Yes. Yes, you want a C4S, get yourself a 9.
It sounds like, yeah, he's saying that anyways.
A 997, he knows.
He knows he wants a C2. You want a C2, Gitmo. What's his name, Gitmo?
Gitmo, I'm going to tell you something.
Hold on, let me just finish so we don't talk over each other. You gave your opinion, now allow me to give mine.
Go ahead.
I forgot the guy's name. Is it Benditmo?
Gitmo.
I want to say Gitmo.
The Benjamin guy.
Benjamin, C2. See, you can feel it in your soul that you want a C2. You want a purist car. You want the power to go to the back two wheels. And you're saying, you're admitting, only on the weekends, you're admitting that you just want a purist car. The C2 is the car for you, all right? Swedish guy who interrupts me on a Monday, God bless you. Say hello to your friends in Sweden. All right, let's get to the real business of the show. The GT3 Touring. Maximini's on the show, by the way. Maximini is a comedian that Jerry told us to book. Remember that?
Yes.
He said, this is the guy. This is the guy to watch.
We've already had kind of one of him on the show.
Who's that?
Maz Gibrani. But now we've got Maximini.
We've got both. But they're
Godzilla
all just
versus Rodan.
Yeah. Oh, well, yes. Okay, I hear what you're saying. But I don't understand why you're saying that.
I don't know. Think I understand why I say anything? Tell your wife, by the way.
Well, one of them. I don't even understand what that means. No, look, I've got to get through stuff, Zuckerman. Forget all of that, these distractions. Okay, a few weeks ago, I posted about the GT3 Touring at LAX that one of the listeners posted, right?
It's so fantastic.
It was sitting in long-term parking. It was a GT3 Touring covered in dust. graffitied penises and other things are drawn on it. Please watch me. What is the story there? Okay. I posted it. I got a lot of response to it. A lot of people going, what the hell's going on? It had no plates. All it had was some sort of documentation that said that this car can come from New York to Los Angeles from a dealer in New York. It had been sitting there for almost a year, right?
Guy was on the fucking lam.
And all sorts of theories came my way about exactly that, or thrown out of the country, or this and that. Then, about 3 days ago, somebody from a dealership, South Bay, I think it is, Porsche, mm-hmm. texted me and goes, I'm in the shop. I work at the shop. Here's the car. And it turns out there was a businessman. This guy just went on a long business trip for close to a year. He wouldn't tell me who this is. It doesn't matter quite really who it is. But he gave the GT3 Touring to the storage place and said, will you take care of this?
But they left it at the airport?
Well, it is an airport lot. He said, I'm traveling for close to a year, and I need you to hold on to this car for me. It's kind of like your GT2 RS at the Montage.
Yes.
It was the same situation. The lot said, yes, we'll take care of it, parked it outside, and left it there.
To rot.
It's right.
Unbelievable. Here, take care of this. Oh, no problem. We'll take great care of it and leave it outside.
And there it was.
Broiling and rotting. Do you know what it must smell like in that car? Decaying animals.
And the outside, obviously, when people are scratching graffiti.
Penis. Why is it always penises?
Well, that's what's funny. You know, I know that's something you do.
I know it's
when
I do.
In hotels. You know there was a guy arrested for doing it, right?
Penis man in Arizona.
Yes.
He was graffitiing on public property and private property. Penises along with penis
well, isn't
man.
Isn't a hotel private property?
Okay. I personally, he's like a folk hero to me. He's up there with a guy who got up on top of the drink cart all those years ago and took a crap
in horrible
first class. Remember him?
He's not a hero.
To me, he is.
Really?
Pick your own heroes.
With everything that's going on in airplanes
okay.
right now,
you
admire that?
I admire somebody who's so fucking frustrated. He says, you want to see my frustration? I will share with you exactly how I feel. I will somehow, as drunk as I am, climb atop a drink cart and take a shit on top of the drink cart, which is extremely difficult to do.
Imagine. Yes, I know the level of difficulty.
And then
he
flung it all over. And then there was Haitian royalty on the plane. They had a land. Somewhere. And I say, you know, in all ways, this
What do you mean? That's a weird detail that only you would remember. There was Haitian royalty
on
that plane?
Or the diplomats, so they couldn't, like, just land anywhere. Actually, they couldn't land anywhere because they had the diplomats, so they had to go all the way to New York and in the stench of this guy.
It was
25 years ago.
I understand. But it was Ambien, it was alcohol. He doesn't remember anything about what – and by the way, this is happening now every day on planes. But I would like to – I think we should do a Where Are They Now with people like this.
That would be fantastic.
These big old stories from 25 years ago, we catch up with them and see how they're doing.
This is a great idea.
Yeah. Then we imagine the reenactments.
I'm very happy.
It's like McMillions.
Now, is your wife going to be mad that we're talking about this? I like
You're
that.
Not going to be able to get over that comment, are you? But
well,
she's not the only one who says this about you, Zuckerman. I will tell you, there's a lot of feedback. There's dads who are like, I like to listen to this.
But I'm crass. I understand.
It's the same way with Howard Stern, with my relationship with Howard Stern. I like to listen to that show, and I put it on occasionally with my kids. And then what I do and what you can do at home is when there's a part that you don't want your kids to listen to, you turn it down, and then you turn it back up. That's all. Because
well,
we're not going to change.
The audience should comment. Would they like to have a sanitized Zuckerman, a G-rated Zuckerman?
You're going to get a sampling of 10 guys saying, yes, keep Zuckerman. And it's a very small
part
of the audience.
It's a loaded. I understand.
It's a loaded. You can't do any real survey. We can only just be ourselves.
Can't we? Like
we can only be ourselves and enjoy our bickering and enjoy everything.
Let me finish
the GT3 Touring, okay? The GT3 Touring story ends with the car goes to South Bay so they can refresh it.
Goof.
And that's where it ends. And now it's back in the hands of the owner. I think the lot has been shamed. The owner feels better that his car is okay. And here we are.
I want that owner to know that if there is something to the story about the mistreatment of the car, that you paid for long-term storage,
true.
That would be a kind of case. Not that I'm really trying to solicit, but I'd love to give you some legal advice on this because I just think it's horrendous that this is what happens. In fact, a friend of mine gave his car to the valet yesterday. I don't really want to say who or what car, but he at a very prestigious establishment.
It wasn't the 992.
No, it wasn't my car. It's not our car. It's nothing like that. But he gave it to them. They left it out on the street. A truck came by and smashed it. Smashed it.
Oh, was this a Porsche?
No, but it was a great car.
It was a nice car.
It was a really, like, an enthusiast car.
An old car?
It was an enthusiast car that people really knew this car and loved this car. And he was there in the restaurant, and somebody came. They didn't even tell him first. They asked for his dining companion to come outside.
Well, wait. Can you at least tell us if this was a vintage car?
It was vintagey. It's a highly sought after 1 year
so
only production
or 80s
car.
Or...
No, it's later than that. It's in the 2000s, but
it was very, very rare.
It's a very rare car.
Okay, well, I don't know who this is, but why did they valet it? Why did you valet a very rare car?
I valet my rare cars.
I know.
It wasn't
why.
Okay,
because this is the risk. This is why I don't valet.
By the way, in this neighborhood, there's nowhere else to park. There's
I understand
nowhere
that.
Else to park.
I'm just saying.
But
there are a lot of us listening right now going, I never valet super rare cars. And that happens.
Yes.
Because of this story.
And that's an opinion that you should have and maybe an action you should take. He gave it to them. They were supposed to put it into their secure lot. But because of the Oscars and all the hoo-ha, they didn't have room. So instead of saying, we don't have room, they did like – these other people at the long-term lot at LAX, they put it out on the street, Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah.
And then smash show.
I mean, it's a horrible story, but that guy has some ownership over the thing that happened. He valeted it. Period. End of stop, dude. Come on. Wake up.
I disagree with you. That's the whole point. You valet it. So you're not leaving
in
the street.
When I hand the keys to a valet, I know if something gets smashed, this is pretty much my fault.
Oh, I don't agree. And the court
of
law
wouldn't agree. Well, I know that. I know they're culpable and you can help them get his money back. But he can't exactly say this isn't entirely not my fault.
Their whole fucking job is to take care of your car, just like the guys at the airport. They failed in their core responsibility.
The reality is these guys ruin our cars all the time.
Yeah, you're right, because nobody puts their hand up in the second grade and says, I want to be a valet parker.
There are lots of good guys. There are guys that we trust. There are guys we know at Ciccone's who take
excellent
care of the car. But if you don't know the people you're handing the car over to, this type of stuff happens.
Do you think valet guys fart in the car?
No. I saw a guy, though, Zuckerman. I'll tell you a guy in our 992. I didn't want to tell you this story. I valeted the 992 at what is that place that we have sushi at? Not Sushi Roku, the other one. Katsuya
Sugarfish
in Brentwood.
Okay.
Right? We take the 992 to get an early dinner there. I hand the keys to the valet. I go inside. I forget something in the car, but I come out in time to see the valet back up at about 70 miles an hour up San Vicente, a whole block towards the Whole Foods. I didn't know it was our 992. And I said to James, my son, I go, what the hell is that valet doing? And then I realized it was our car. That he was backing, he saw the light hadn't changed behind him, and he backed the thing up a hurry quickly past 10 parked cars that could have pulled out at about 70 miles an hour backwards, right? And then I went in to dinner, and James is looking at me, my kid, he goes, was that guy supposed to do that? And I was like, no, and I'm trying not to go back out there and talk to the guy. Trying not to go out and go, what the fuck are you doing,
dude? And what the fuck is wrong with you?
But I couldn't let it ruin my dinner. I was so excited to have dinner with my family. And this thing, I needed to say some things to the guy. But I calmed down before I went out and said it to him.
Mm.
And he told me, he goes, no, I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't do anything wrong. I just backed up into the lot. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It was one of the most unsafe things I've ever seen.
Did you say, is that how they taught you to do it? Didn't they teach you to go make a U-turn and go back?
You know what I was doing consciously? I was trying not to be you in that moment. Now, I use your words in a lot of situations, but with that guy, I had to take into consideration what he does for a living and, you know, probably gets crap from a lot of people like us in Brentwood. But I did say you can't do that anymore. It's a very unsafe thing to do, not just for my car, but for you and for people pulling out.
People.
It's just bad.
Guys in the bike lane.
And I talked to his boss about it. And, we, you know, on the way out, there were no hard feelings. So I handled it okay.
Oh.
My kids didn't believe me.
You're making progress. 55 years old and you're making progress.
55. You just keep rubbing that 55.
55 and you're getting, making progress. You'll anyway, be really nice when you're dead.
Shut up. All right. Well, we'll be back in a minute. Max Amini, the comedian, is here on Spike's Car Radio. You know, we all have a to-do list. There's lots of stuff on it. You got to get your dry cleaning. You got to get your milk. Here's an idea. Put save hundreds of dollars on car insurance on your to-do list. And the good thing is you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. All you have to do is go to geico.com. In 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket. It may be the most rewarding thing you do today.
You're listening to Spike's Car Radio.
Hey, Max. Very nice to meet you. I'm Spike.
Paul Zuckerman.
Paul Zuckerman. Z, you can sit right over there. We don't need headphones. You were saying he's the Persian Sebastian Maniscalco, Zuckerman. Why?
Well, yeah. What just makes look at the kind that? Of the look. He's a thin whip of a guy, handsome. He's got a little bit of an edge with his black shit on. He's got his glasses on. And he's giving, you know, comedians laugh. Ha ha.
I thought it's the accent. He's talking about the accent.
Cause I guess.
Sebastian has got the accent. But he's on this right here.
His
like right in. Inside the mic.
Max, it's very nice to meet you. You're
thank
here.
You,
we were having coffee with Jerry Seinfeld recently, and he said you got to get Max Meany on the show.
Yeah, Jerry's a big fan of mine.
I think
he's mediocre, but
well
that's
said.
Very nice.
where have you run into Jerry?
I actually seen him in New York a couple of times, L.A. when he was trying some new material, but he's comes from a different era. He's, you know, he doesn't come hang out at the comedy clubs like a lot of the other comics, so I don't really know him like that.
Yeah, not anymore.
Yeah.
But, well then why is he coming to us going, Max, I mean, he's the guy.
No, he did not.
He did.
No, you're kidding.
No, he did.
I thought you were joking.
I'm not joking
so
at all.
So let me correct my joke. Jerry Seinfeld is a freaking king.
Yeah.
And for him to
not
tell you guys,
era.
Just bring
right
me.
There.
Yes.
We were having coffee with Jerry 2 weeks ago on the porch. And he was talking about this next generation of comedians. And he goes, you know who you have to have on? I'm not joking. He said you.
You know why? Because
that's what
probably
asking.
He asked Netflix, why don't we have Max Amini for coffee in cars? And they said, no way we're going to bring him on Netflix. He's like, okay, let me tell him what podcast. Podcast one, take Max Amini.
No, that's not
pretty
it.
Cool, man.
He said that he saw your act. He said that you have a giant following, that you're booking theaters all over the place, and
that's
he
so
just
sweet.
Thought your stand-up was up there with the best.
That is so sweet, man. He must have seen me somewhere, or I don't know how it happened, but that's shocking to me. And
it's your lucky day, Max. I mean,
if you're messing with me, fuck you from the bottom of my heart.
I am not.
And if you're not, and if you're not, that is freaking cool.
I'm
man.
Not. Why would I?
I'm going to share the hell out of this podcast.
Yes,
you absolutely should. You absolutely should. But I'm not lying. I'm not lying.
Really, really cool.
I know that you were doing Elizabeth. You'll correct me if I'm wrong, but Max was pitched to us 6 months ago, and we had you booked, and then you had to cancel, or something went on because of his schedule, right?
Yeah,
I'm on
scheduling.
The road a lot. That's
yeah. It was just like you came in one, and I remembered it. And when Jerry brought it up, I said, "Yeah, I think he was supposed to be on."
Mm-hmm.
And then we
yep.
had booking reach out again, and now here
wow,
you are.
Sweet.
So congratulations.
That's really, really cool. You guys are terrific.
All right. Well, that's it. No, get out of here. No, I'm joking. So for those who don't know Max Amini, you know Maz Jobrani?
Talk to Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah. Talk to Jerry Seinfeld.
Maz Jobrani. gosh, we've been friends for about 16 years now.
No, really? So yeah, back in college or pre-college?
I was in college, and Maz had been doing stand-up about 4 or 5 years ahead of me. I had just gotten into stand-up comedy. He was he's such a terrific soul. He's such a good guy. So another comedian, Brett Ernst, Italian comic, great comedian. We were all young comics in the game at the time. And he goes, hey, man, there's another Persian guy you got to meet. And takes me to this back room. And they were doing a little sketch comedy type of thing. And Maz and I met and been friends since. Play the same circuit, both Persian. So everybody, you know, comparisons and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you see, you're very different. You know, you're very different.
Zuckerman did right in the beginning of the show.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, if comics are not different, they're not real comics.
Right.
You know, if you're the same as someone else, then it doesn't make any sense. You're not, you haven't figured out your voice. But Maz is a terrific guy.
He's great, right?
That's what I like about him. Forget about comedy. Forget about the business. Just a terrific guy.
He is.
Even if you're not in the business, you know, he's a great guy, very knowledgeable, sweetheart, and that's what made our, like, we always prioritize our friendship over the business.
Mm-hmm. He was doing the Axis of Evil comedy tour at that time.
Yes.
That's when I first met him, because I thought that was so clever and so funny. And I think we sold a pilot to CBS at some point, the wrong network to do that show. But, yeah, I'm a huge fan of his. And now you're. Now, you grew up in Tucson, Arizona.
I was born there. Grew up in Washington, D.C.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was born in Tucson. My parents were going to the University of Arizona. I was born there, and then we moved to D.C. My dad finished his PhD at GW.
And what does dad do now?
My dad passed.
Oh, he did.
He was. He
but like, what was
any,
he studying?
Any good Persian, he finished his school and got into real estate.
The true American success story.
Exactly, a true Persian American success story.
Yes. And when when did this stand-up comedy thing start for you? Washington D.C.
Right out of high school. Out of high school, Dad said, "Major in something you truly love." And I said, "Okay." Took some classes. Fell in love with acting. I said, "Dad, I want to become an actor." He said, "You're crazy. You sure?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Are you doing it for the girls?" I said, "No, Dad. It's the only class I don't think about the girls." He said, "Wow." So Dad was very supportive. He said, "If you love it, you know, as long as you finish college, you have my support." So I you know, went into acting, and then on the side of acting, I started taking some stand-up comedy workshops, and then got into stand-up comedy, fell in love with it. I still do my acting. I just finished directing a movie. I'm heavily involved in production side of things since I went to UCLA Film School, blah, blah, blah.
Wow.
But my stand-up kind of took over and overshadowed
And
it's a blessing either way.
But I don't know if the listeners know, but to get into UCLA Film School, that is a really hard position to enter into. That means you really had talent and possibility. And you know, what are they, thousands of applicants, and they take in some 100%.
Yeah. Even harder for a kid who hardly ever studied.
Right.
You know, I was not a good student in high school. And then what made me really want to go into the best school was because my dad's blessing. When he said, "You know, I love for you." You know, it's a big deal for a Persian parent to
to approve of that.
Yeah, go.
Don't be a doctor. Don't be a lawyer. Follow your heart.
Because they don't usually do that?
Not at
all.
Doctor, lawyer.
But that's any parent. That's not necessarily a Persian parent.
But 10 times harder for an Asian parent, for a Persian parent, ethnic families, especially immigrants who come to this country, you know, fighting for their lives to be here and finally get here and work so hard to raise a family. And for their kid to, you know, for them to feel like, especially with that generation, that mentality, "Oh, this kid's going to go become a druggie and you know,
waste his life.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a big deal. So they always encourage you to become an engineer, a doctor, a lawyer, something of some
profession,
kind.
Profession, yeah.
Exactly. So it was a big deal. And that encouragement and that kind of love made me go, "You know what? I'm going to surprise them. I'm going to go to best school possible."
How did you pull it off?
I studied my ass off. I had to finish community college first because my grades were so bad. So I went to 2 years of community college and really killed myself to bring up my grades. And then I started applying. First year, didn't get accepted. Second year, I applied again.
Sure.
Second year, I applied again. And second year, you know, once they look at your grades and they also interview you and you have to audition as well. So I got lucky and I, you know, I had a good interview, a good audition. And
what's the audition?
You play a monologue. You play a comedy and you play a drama, two monologues. And
do you
based
remember
on your
what
performance,
you did?
Of course he does, but he doesn't want us to.
I don't think he remembers. To be honest, it was some Shakespeare, some weird monologue.
Shakespeare, you picked.
Yeah, alas, poor Yorick.
For my drama, it was a deal. You know, for something like UCLA, you have to impress.
Right.
You have to be. You think outside the box, and so I picked a drama monologue that was from Shakespeare, and it was a very heavy-duty monologue. Worked on it for a long time. That was my decision the second year I was going in for the audition. So then a comedy I did, and then they asked me to do some improv. I think I don't know for sure, but I think the professor was really, really excited from my improv. You know, that's I think that's what made him give me a good score on my audition.
Mm-hmm. What a great story.
Yeah. Wow. Look at that. And then have you been out here ever since? Or do you not
I've been
live
out
here
ever since, yeah. Yeah.
That's it. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look at you.
Thank you.
Now you're doing it.
I'm impressed. This guy is great.
You like all of these stories.
Of course, because look at
college.
What he did. It's, you know, zero to hero, right?
No, I really think this story, the best part of it is for parents to allow kids to follow their dreams, really. You know, every day, no matter what background you're from, the parents really like make their kids' lives so difficult by thinking they own these people. And they control their destiny, mm-hmm. which is not true. You can't control anybody's destiny.
When kids are little, they're babies, you're controlling everything.
True.
And then you have to pull back.
But,
the
moms never do.
They never do.
At the right time to have your dad say, you got to follow your heart. Imagine if he didn't.
Yeah,
where would you be? Yeah.
I would also be in real estate right now.
Miserable. What's miserable.
Really? Maybe. How did your dad do in real estate? Did he do okay?
He did okay. He wasn't the best businessman either.
That's every Persian guy I've ever met says the same thing. There's a little self-deprecation. This is kind of a... You don't want to jinx it and say he did well. You don't want to bring down the economy. So you say he did okay.
Zuckerberg,
he could have done better.
You've been living in Beverly Hills too long.
And I'm Jewish, so I know like the whole story, right? I'm imbued with it.
So Zuckerman lives. What you don't know about him is he has his own personal injury law firm, right?
Oh, my God.
I know.
He's known as the he's got the Jewish crew. The Zuckerman crew is the Jewish crew. And he makes these sweeping generalizations about all the different ethnic law firms around and the different types. And he's always talking about the Persian firms and the way they do business. And why don't you ask him some questions? Because maybe he can shed some light on this culture and how they do business.
We have to ask first, though, but which tribe are you from? Are you Jewish? Are you Baha'i, Zoroastrian? Are you Muslim? Which you know, and I don't want to put you on the spot. You can say.
No. I cover all of them.
Yeah, you cover all of them.
I cover all of them. Grew up in L.A. Obviously grew up in the Jewish community. I know the Muslim background fantastically. Baha'is. I have a lot of great Baha'i friends. Went to the temple many times to do open mics and spent a lot of time. So I think the most beautiful thing about Persian culture is the religion comes secondary.
Right.
All Persians first identify to one another as the race, as their Iranians.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then secondly, they go, oh, this is my religious background and whatnot. But they really, for many years, lived in peace and harmony in Iran without ever being affected by what they believe in. Now, because of politics and the regime and blah, 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 and all this new scenarios this past 40 years, it's been... very complicated.
They used to, I believe, if you were from a certain part of Persia, that was a bigger deal than what your religion was. I think, was it Hamadan people are supposed to be like very arrogant?
Oh, my God, he's a professional. He knows more than me.
Right.
I know Tarantulas.
It tells you a little bit about the chip on my shoulder. Here's the thing. Like, I come from Long Island, Ashkenazi Jew. I meet the Persian Jews, the Sephards. They've got the greatest fucking manners. They are very good at manners. They've got great polish. And I'm crass and I'm coarse, right? So immediately I'm feeling like, you know, why do these guys have such good manners? But then when it comes to negotiating, man, they'll cut your fucking throat over a fucking nickel. And me, a deal's a deal for me. I don't need to go to lunch. I don't need to break bread. I don't need to, like, have tea with you or bro out or do all of this shit. If I say I'm going to do something for you, I'm going to shake your hand, that's it, and let me on my way. But the constant renegotiation and the hocking, the chiseling, it drives me fucking nuts.
Give us an example.
The constant renegotiation, I hear him say a lot.
Yeah.
We have a deal, and they come back the next day and go, look, what if we do this?
Okay, well, if I'm doing a deal with attorneys, they constantly want to say, I want to leave here feeling good. And then I say, but that means I got to feel bad. Why do, can't we both be okay? Why the fuck you got to feel good at my expense? And like, how dare you really come in and say, I need to feel good leaving here, so you need to feel bad. Like, would you really come in here and say, use the words, I need you to feel bad, so I'm happy leaving? No. Like, you know, so,
do you have anything?
Yeah.
No response.
You know, why do you need more than, why do you need more than half the sandwich?
But that could be
right?
true. That could be true of anything.
Right. But it's particular. And then I get the clients. They want to always negotiate the fee. And I have to say, like, lady, if you're going to negotiate the fucking fee, you can't have the diamonds on. You can't have the Rolex. You can't have the Cartier. You got to lock. Take that shit off. Put it in your purse. Lock it in the trunk. Smear up your makeup. And look the part of someone begging for a discount. Don't come from, like, this position where you're telling me you have $200 million in real estate and you need a 10% discount. You know, just you want some save some money, go to fucking Supercuts. Get your hair cut there.
Well, you know what? You said it so perfectly, buddy. We should take this soundbite and put a sponsor by Zuckerberg right on every Persian radio station. Yeah. Take off your
diamonds.
He's
got these opinions about everybody. And it serves him in his, you know, I'm writing a show about it, which is makes me laugh.
Brilliant, brilliant.
Well, there was,
I'm an equal opportunity. I will poke fun
at
everybody.
Story, but this story about the Korean woman who ran over the guy on the motorcycle. You remember that?
Tell me again.
You were taking her deposition, and you were sitting across from the table, and she had her lawyer there, and you said she was on the 10.
Yes.
So before you went into the lane, did you signal? She goes, I don't remember.
Yeah.
She goes, you looked in your mirrors, your side, did you see the guy behind you? She goes, I don't recall. He goes, well, what car were you driving? She goes, I don't recall.
Yeah.
And you realize she's just not going to answer any questions.
Right. So I turned it around.
So you called me, you said, so then this is what I did, Spike.
Well,
you know, the Koreans, they don't like to think that they don't want anybody to know that they go to a psychiatrist or something's wrong with their brain. Right?
Yeah. It's a stigma. It's not Jewish. You want to have a Jew wants to have seven shrinks. A Korean doesn't want to ever have anything.
This is what he says to me on the phone. But I go, that is, I don't even know if it's racist. I don't know what it is, but it can't be true. It's a sweeping generalization. He goes, yeah, well, listen to this. So I turned off of her to her lawyer and I said to him, I go, hey, what's wrong with your client? He goes, excuse me? He goes, does she got something wrong with her brain? Does she got rocks in her head? And he goes, excuse me? Because she doesn't remember what car she drove. She doesn't remember anything. So I'm guessing she has some sort of traumatic brain injury.
Or psychological. Deficits.
And the woman.
Goes crazy,
is insulted. She goes, ask me again. She goes, what car was I driving?
And then she, of course.
She answers every question. Yes. Did I look at the car? Yes,
oh,
I did.
Oh, my God.
I didn't care. I just signaled and I just went. She goes, there, I know what I'm talking about. And she hung herself right in the deposition. So there was something to this, right?
You know,
at the same time, it's completely insane.
I don't know. I can make fun of myself and my upbringing and my culture. I don't have a problem. We're all – remember, I always say the 11th commandment, don't take yourself too seriously. That's right. The only one I need. I don't need the first 10. I'm not going to covet your wife or kill you.
But as a lawyer, you're going above and beyond. You're going above and beyond the case. Now you're going into cultures and you study, like, you know,
you start to see patterns.
What you know, what they believe in.
But Max, you know what makes things funny, right? You start when you learn what makes people tick. How are you going to get a laugh? Because you're studying them. Not that different.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to find the deep
thing.
Exactly. Deep in there what people can relate to and what, you know, what's real. But I got to say, back to this quick thing about the Persians and their you know, trying to get a deal and discounts and blah 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 and negotiations and, you know, killing you for 10% off. First of all, I'm going to say this. The new generation is not like that.
Mm-hmm.
The new generation is way cooler. They got, you know, they're Americanized. They grew up here. They still mm-hmm. they're still going to get a great deal and make you feel terrible, but they will not do it in a cheesy way.
Right.
But I think the older generation, they came from that background.
Right.
In the bazaar, they had to, like,
yeah.
you know.
The
at all times, someone, like, if they left and they didn't try hard enough, they would feel, like, terrible later. And they go, oh, somebody ripped me off.
Can't be a doormat at the souk.
That's right. By the way, my wife is in Persian, and she does this all the time.
Your wife is Persian.
She's not. Oh, but she does this. She haggles all the time for everything. It's just something people do.
We're listening. We're chatting with Maximini. Max, do you drive? You look like a guy who might enjoy cars too. Are you a car guy?
I love cars. Yes.
You do?
Yes.
What do you drive?
I drive a Maserati.
Come on. Which one?
It's Ghibli.
Nice. Oh, there you go.
Yeah. I own a 1964 T-Bird.
Fuck yeah.
Wow.
1980 Corvette.
Oh, yes.
And I have a big ass Sprinter van for production.
Oh,
okay.
That's cool.
We love the show. So it's got the bird's got the square taillights in 64, right? Mm-hmm. They went from round to square, but you got that great interior
car
design. You've got the steering wheel that shifts over to the left. Yes. You've got that Ford just fucking killed that whole dashboard with the round gauges sitting out, and then that sweep of the metal into the center console. Wow.
It's gorgeous. It really is.
What
and
color?
It's so clean. It's burgundy inside, pearl outside. It's I bought the car from my ex-girlfriend's mom. The car has 54,000 miles original. That's it.
Yeah.
Gorgeous. Wow. Gorgeous. It's really beautiful. And it's clean and it runs nice. And my Corvette has been a project, a 3-year project.
Labor
of
love.
Driving me crazy. But you know, when you're busy.
What's the holdup? What's the problem with it?
The mechanic. The mechanic.
Well, why are you still with them? 3 years is long enough.
Because they've got you. You're sucked in. You've already given them 95% of the money.
Once your car's in there to get it out.
Hostage.
It's exactly.
I had a car. You know, it was my Series 2A at a mechanic down on La Cienega. And he was doing this. And I had to extricate the car from him. But I realized 7 months in, this was going to go nowhere. You know, it's an interesting situation you're in, but you got to pull that car at this point. You got to find someone new. That's this guy, every time you called, oh, my guys are going to get to it next week. Oh, well, I go down there. They're watching, you know, soccer games. They're not working on it. They're telling stories. Half the work was done. And they string you along. A bad shop will string you along. And it's not until you go pop. And I sent the series out to Venice to that old guy there.
Smokey Joe. He did retire?
Yeah, he's done. He's divorcing his wife, made me pay him in cash all the time so the wife doesn't find out.
And he was like 100 years old and smoked unfiltered cigarettes. Like, where do you think you're going,
dude? I used to repair Letterman stuff back in the day. Genius guy. But he got that Series 2 fixed in 5 days as opposed to the 5 months of the shop where it had been sitting because those guys, they're falling apart, right?
What color is the Vette?
It's a matte black.
Nice.
Yeah. It's gorgeous.
I drove a 79 Vette cross country in 1982. It was fantastic.
Really?
That long. Yeah, a girl at USC needed a pack on Long Island, Italian girl. And so I drove that thing with that long front end board, and I feel good in that car.
There are a few cars I've always been obsessed about. Right. Corvette's one of them. So growing up, I was in the car business for a long time. Buying and selling cars, used cars.
So you were car salesman?
Yeah.
That's your guy right there.
Polyurethane bumpers, we love it. Yeah.
Mine is a matte black, so you know the it's gorgeous.
But you matted it out. They didn't make a matte black, right?
You know, so while you know, when I was younger, I couldn't afford a lot of these things, and so when I got older, a couple of things that it was always part of my, you know,
we've got the same thing.
I'm like, you know,
first
what?
Nickel,
and I still got a good deal. I bargained for that extra 10%.
So wait, when you sold cars, what did that look like?
Well, I had to survive, so. While I was going to college, I would Friday, Saturdays, Washington, D.C., Washington Post, they would post all the new car, used cars.
Ads,
people
right.
Sell. So I would go through the ads. First thing in the morning, I would find the best deals. I would call, show up first person, buy the car cash, bring it home, clean it, work on it, make it look good, and put it back in the paper, sell it $1,000 higher.
Really?
Yeah, I did that for years.
And what cars did you sell primarily?
Mainly Toyotas and Hondas. Because that's what people will buy used and it will flip fast. If you buy a Volkswagen, for example, you would probably get stuck with the car for like 2 months all of a sudden. But Toyota Camry, Corollas, Hondas, they sold so easy, so fast. So I learned how to, work on cars, fix them up, and I made a living doing that.
Did you ever get any surprises, any bad cars where you went, oh, man, now I'm screwed on this one?
Yeah, but
you can part them out, right?
Yeah, but because I really didn't have the margin to make any mistakes,
right.
I would really, really check out the car. So it happened rarely. And if it did, it wasn't anything major. It was something I had $400 or $500, and my profit mm-hmm. would be less.
Got it.
Did you ever find good shit in the car? Dope.
Dope.
Dope and money.
I have a car dealer.
The drug dealers I bought cars from, they were very, very stingy.
Yeah.
They cleaned it up really nicely.
Bastards. Mints.
But we all had those like cars that you buy like an amazing deal. Like
right.
you know, I had a couple of greats. Like I remember there was this, there was a Chevy, and I wasn't into American cars. But somebody called me and said, "Look, there's this Chevy downtown D.C., and this old couple owned this car. It's in the back of their lot, and they don't even want to post it. They're so old. Can you go take a look at it?" I go look at this car. It was on like all these leaves are on it. I check out the car. I jump started. The car was in terrific shape. It was such a beautiful car. It was just very dirty, and that was it. So I made an offer to the guy. He goes, "Yeah, I just want somebody to take it." "Are you kidding me? Somebody to take it?" I said, "I will take it right now." And they're like, "Okay, get it out of here."
And that was it.
And that was it. And I sold the car for like $6,000 or something.
Wow.
And I just took the car out of there.
See, these are the little victories when we're younger. Oh, we remember.
Oh,
you could be playing in theaters in front of hundreds of thousands, tens of thousands of people, but the time the old fucker gave him the Chevy, that's sweetness.
That's $6,003.
Oh, my God. There was another. I bought a Celica convertible red, and there was some sort of the paint looked like the paint was was destroyed. But when I was there, I scratch, and I'm like, "Wait a minute! If I buff it, this whole thing will come out." And the guy kept going, "Yeah, man, the paint is gonna destroy you. It needs a whole paint job." I'm looking at this guy. I'm like, "Okay, well, I'll buy it, and I don't want a 10% off. I'll buy it just like this, same price. Uh-huh. Buy the car, take it home, buff it, buff the whole thing out. The car looks so clean." So beautiful, you couldn't believe it.
It was like a white rind that preserved the paint.
These were like the massive, like... You know,
this is what he's so celebrating. You're not a watch guy, though.
It's treasure hunting.
No. I used to, not anymore.
Why? Yeah. What was that all about?
First of all, if you want to get in a watch game, you got to spend a lot of money once you get in that game to be able to, you know...
Keep
because
up.
Now there's, the mediocre watches cost $50,000. Mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's
mm-hmm.
okay for now. But also, there was a time I really enjoyed it. Now it bothers me. It really bothers me.
Is that your microphone
hand? I usually
hand?
Take it off every time before I go on stage. I feel it on my wrist when I'm on stage.
You don't want it on stage.
No.
No. It sends the wrong message to the audience, right?
Yeah.
I don't like seeing, I don't even like seeing Seacrest with his Daytonas on the morning show. It's just not the right, it takes away from your connection with the audience.
Yeah. Tell me more.
Well, that's it. It's that simple.
Yeah.
You know how.
The audience doesn't want to think you're marking time up there. Right?
It's not that philosophy.
Like Jerry has one. He's got the Breitling he wears,
but he keeps it that quiet.
But there are a bunch of comedians who have a modest watch, but that they can also glance at without letting the audience know they just saw the time, how deep they are into their act. He's talking about a different class of watch. When you're up there, I don't know. There's just something too rich guy about that. It's like the Rolls Royce. You know, you get in it. It's because
the reason I said, tell me more. Comedy is not about being flashy.
Mm-hmm.
Comedy
exactly.
is not about God, the shirt you're wearing. Comedy is about the message you're sending out about what you're talking about.
Yes.
And if anything's going to take away from that, then it's distracting.
Right. Right.
If your act is about being flashy, if your act is about being, somebody who's, that guy, then okay. Then it's supporting your act.
Mm-hmm.
But anything that's not supporting your act, I try to dress simple. I try to dress comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
It's not for me when I go on stage. It's not about the brand I'm flashing. It's not about I like to wear something that really resonates me,
mm-hmm.
and it's not distracting. And I learned that the hard way.
How many nights a year are you doing every year on tour?
I do 60 cities a tour a year. And then
around the
between,
world, right?
Yes. And in between, obviously, like 3-4 gigs a night.
That's busy.
Doing it at the comedy club. So,
are you just, I mean, do you hate flying at this point?
I do. Flying is the hardest part, man.
What? You've seen a lot. I don't know if you follow passenger shaming on Instagram. It's a great site. It's just people sending in the people who aren't wearing socks on airplanes.
Drying underwear in the van.
Or the people like Zuckerman was talking about taking dumps on beverage carts.
Oh, my God.
And it's turning into a thing. Like, everybody's relating to it. It seems like it's falling apart, right? I mean.
Well, it's just tough, man. It's tough on your body. It's just you walk
into
these airports.
It's the people.
It's the people. For me, it's less the people. It's like every weekend I get up, I got to pack, get in the car, walk forever to go to a gate, massive airport. And then you get to a gate and they're like, oh, sorry, the gate has been changed. It's not gate 18 anymore. Uh-huh. Which gate is it? Gate 218. What? 5 days walk
level
this way. Running like an idiot in the airport. This is the very, very difficult part. Or you get there, you're delayed by 3 hours.
Right.
This part hurts me so much more than somebody's sock. Man.
What do you travel with?
Delta. Delta is
No,
my,
no, I mean as far as like stuff.
Gear.
Have you got it down to a small backpack? Or?
No. Well, I don't pack heavy, but I fly with my production crew. So they're we got merch. We have camera equipment. And then so all of this accumulates. And so we have got 3, 4, 5 suitcases.
Right.
Do
you have to wait for baggage or do they let you
go
to your hotel room? You wait with everybody?
I wait with everybody.
How big is the team?
It's four of us.
Four of you.
And
that's fun.
If the smaller gigs, 2 of us fly. Bigger gigs, 3 of us fly.
So you always have somebody with you, which makes it a lot easier.
Always.
Yeah,
always.
That's nice.
It's impossible. At some point of my career, I realized I was trying to save money. I was trying to do this. And at some point, you graduate one level, you go to the next level, and
right.
you have to accommodate.
Right.
So the production guys I have, they're terrific. They're really great. So I enjoy having them on the road. I love my team. I fly with them. We spend time together.
So they're setting up the theater for you.
Yeah.
They're making sure the stool is there.
I show up 10 minutes before I go on.
That's great.
Yeah,
you're just done.
I don't like being at the theater.
Do you have a glass? Do you have a glass of water you put on the stool?
Yes.
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 How big does your glass? What are the weird things in your rider that we wouldn't see in anybody else's rider?
Oh, man.
Come on. Is it a bowl of condoms?
Gluten-free.
What is it?
Gluten-free. I'm gluten-free.
You're gluten-free.
And I'm dairy-free.
Okay.
So most of the times, my company produces my tours. So most of the times, we don't have a writer that goes up. But once in a while, when I work with promoters, I told my manager, I really don't like to be that guy when they
difficult.
See my writer to go with.
Yeah.
I don't do that. So the only thing
but
is, if there is any snacks in there, if it could be gluten-free or dairy-free, and I put preference, like chips, like these are easy stuff for them to grab,
right.
You know, chips and some coffee or some tea. So I make it easy. I don't want to be the guy. I don't believe in that. And I just, I want to be the guy to get what he needs.
Yeah.
And it's not putting too much pressure on it.
What about
anybody.
A treat after, like a peanut M&M?
No,
do you have
nothing.
Anything you like
and,
to do?
Some
after
people are like, they don't want the color blue in their M&M.
Right.
Yeah? Fuck them. I try so hard not to be that
do you
guy.
Have a at your act, do you have a point where you take the sip of water? I know that's like a Jerry thing. Jerry has this point.
Yeah,
where
there are
I
a couple
know,
of jokes that yeah,
he knows
the laugh
he's
is coming
got enough
in a way
laugh that
he
it's
can
to
stop.
Drink.
No, not me.
That's a Jerry thing.
I drink when I'm thirsty.
Are you a single guy?
I just got into a relationship.
You just got into
yeah,
a relationship.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Terrific girl.
It won't
it's
get better.
Exciting.
So
it's
on
more
the
of the same, but worse. That's life.
On the road. But do you have women waiting for you on the road?
Well, segue.
Thank
you.
Now
that you have a girlfriend.
That was the most asshole question you could have possibly asked. How do I answer that?
You could have said you could.
Yes,
give me
there
the,
is a line
the whole world.
I flip them off and walk away.
No, before the girlfriend. He's just a girlfriend. I mean.
As an entertainer, you better not get into a relationship
I'm not
unless
saying that.
You're
look,
really
look,
happy.
You're misunderstanding
he had
the question. Wait a second.
I'm
both
sure.
of you are misunderstanding the question.
Okay.
We want to know. We want to live vicariously through you. And what I'm asking is, on the road as a comedian, not that you would do this, but are there girls, is there a moment where you go, my gosh, there are girls waiting for me. There are girls that want to sleep with me.
I'm glad you re-explained the question. We both did not misunderstand you. And I'm not going to answer you. The girls are waiting for me.
Yes, right.
Girls are not waiting for me.
They're not.
Absolutely.
Come on.
Okay? They're
not
waiting.
True.
They're not waiting.
You're smiling now.
They're not waiting. This guy.
They come to the hotel, don't they?
Determined to make
get a confessional.
I'd like to know. Someday I may want to
okay,
go.
Okay, fair enough.
I think
when
anybody's
you become
on
a
stage,
rock star, you know.
No, but I think anybody on stage is getting attention, blah, blah, blah.
Right,
but,
right.
But
right.
I'm telling you, I also think it's your behavior. Like, if you want to attract that or you don't.
And, right.
And I'm not the kind of guy, if somebody even sends me a DM, like, is being nice, like, hey, you know, I want to hang out with you or something. You know, the ones, I usually don't respond, or if I ever respond to something really nice.
Where did you meet this girl?
I met her actually in L.A. I met her. She's a model. She's an actress. She's a face of Guest Marciano. She's a supermodel.
Wow.
Yes, yes. Now that we're talking, I throw her
name.
Oh, my God. Her
name is
now I know why you're being so protective.
Yes. Estrella Nuri.
Oh, well, look her up.
Estrella Nuri.
So wait a second. Is she Hispanic? Is she Persian?
She's Persian. Persian background, born in Sweden, raised in America.
Oh, you've got everything.
Yes.
The trifecta.
Yes.
Ding, 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 ding.
And she's a wonderful person.
We're going to send him on the road, and we're going to say, get Robert Plant, bell bottom pants.
Lovely young woman right here.
Yes. I think she looks very nice to me. She's very.
So now do you still want? So do you still want to ask that question again?
He edited the first two things that popped into his head, and I know they were dirty and horrible.
No,
and anyway,
okay.
She's very sweet. Look at
to me, Maximini commands
a girl.
Maximini commands
dude.
A lot
did
of respect.
Did you ever think?
Well, I didn't, first of all. She's so classy. She's a really wonderful person.
Well, here she is with Oprah Winfrey. Look at that.
She was on Oprah's TV show.
Are you feel like you're playing above your game with this gal?
Yeah, absolutely. She's way above my game. Yes, yes, yes.
Congratulations.
Have you ever met Oprah Winfrey?
No.
You are playing above your game, Max.
Thank you.
Well, this is great. What a life you have, friend. Look at that. Isn't this amazing, Zuckerman? This guy?
Impressive. From the immigrant story, the college success story.
From Tucson,
From Tucson, to D.C., to UCLA Film School, to Jerry Seinfeld saying, this guy's fucking great.
From and buying and selling cars.
I know.
And the $6,000 fine. Look at that grab. Grand, $6,000.
And he's still proud of
thousands.
That. Forget about the Estrella Nori. It's the Chevy that's the high point of his life.
I think that's what the listeners are going to take from this episode, is that there's...
Okay, when do we see you? Where am I going to find your show?
In town, I'm at the Laugh Factory.
Well,
this Friday, I'll be at
the Laugh
Factory.
Catch up with you on your website, right?
Yeah,
and that's
absolutely.
Maximini.com?
Maximini.com. Shows are lined up. I hope you guys can come out and we'll have a good time.
Yeah.
You're playing the Ice House soon?
Yes, 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 yes.
Maybe that's,
Ferrison, let's go see this
anytime.
Gentleman. I like him.
Yeah. That will be my pleasure.
All right.
Absolutely.
That was Maximini, ladies and gentlemen. Zuckerman, you have anything to say before we go? Anything you'd like to add about the Korean
people?
Does
she have a sister? is there like a Marisol Nori?
She doesn't have a sister.
Yes.
And I'm happy to introduce you to her mom.
fantastic.
But you know, whatever happens on you. You guys were terrific, man. Thank you for the wonderful, easy, great chat. I had a great time.
Thank you for coming on. That's all we have for you folks. We'll see you next week on Spike's Car Radio.
Thanks for listening to Spike's Car Radio. Download new episodes every Wednesday on the Podcast One app or subscribe now at Apple Podcasts or podcastone.com.